Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Face Us, the radio show where we listen to your voice and talk about the corruption we all face every day in our courts. America's courts have been co-opted by organized crime organizations operating under the color of law to defraud their victims of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We, the people, must confront the perpetrators of these crimes to have any hope of creating transparency and accountability in our courts and repairing our legal system. We stand with you to create this accountability. It's time to face us. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Face Us Radio, Blog Talk Radio, Hidden Truth Revealed, and this is the Inside Scoop. Today is March 29th, 2023. My name is Robin Austin. I'm with my co-host tonight, Lou Ann Fleming.
Hello, everybody. We also have Hillary Hogus with us tonight. Say hello to everyone, Hillary.
Hi, everyone. How are you? And again, another show, and looking forward to it. Thank you.
Absolutely. We did give Marcy Friedman a night off. She's not feeling well, so hugs to Marcy and everything she's been doing. She's got like three or four people all wanting to come on to the radio show. So we're going to be bringing them people on in the next few weeks, and there's some exciting guests that we're going to have on. It's going to be great. Anyway, we've got a – hey, Hillary, you have anything you want to talk about real quick before we bring Phil on?
Other than tomorrow at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, and it is on Zoom, via Zoom, Senator Casey's Committee on Aging will be having a hearing concerning fraudulent guardianships and least restrictive alternatives to guardianship. We do have advocates / activists in the Capitol, and really excited. Really, it's like a Justin Bieber or a Tom Jones concert for me. I am like super excited to hear anyone talk about guardianship, let alone people in Washington speaking about guardianship. So that's something. I had a podcast. Luann can talk a little bit more about it if she likes, that came out, yeah. And it was Sony Music and Apple podcast. And honestly, I never really had listened to a podcast before, but it focuses on Jan Garwood's case. I'm in it. Vita Ropo, an attorney from Naples, is in it. And I just think it's like a different thing, and it's a different way of explaining what's going on in probate court. And, you know, a lot of the cool kids, they listen to podcasts quite often, so you don't need to buy Sony Music or Apple Music or Apple Podcast. Luann, I'm sure, will post it on Faceless Radio, and you just go in and you press it. There are a few advertisements in between, but nothing huge, and you don't have to pay a penny, but I love it if you looked at it, critique it, share it with your kids, with your parents, whoever, and it, again, is just another way to get the word out about guardianship. And I will just say this before we start, and I let the host take over, that we are grateful for Phil Ross. We are grateful for Phil Ross, and we are grateful for what he has done to help the underdogs, the respondents, the defendants in these guardianship cases, the elderly, the disabled, who have committed no crimes, and representing also the family members that would cut their arms and legs off to get their loved ones out from under a fraudulent situation. We wish you, I think I can speak on behalf of Robin and Luann, we wish you a long and healthy retirement, and you deserve it, my friend. So thank you again.
Yeah, that's wonderful you said. And that is one reason that we wanted to bring former, well, now he's a former attorney, Philip Ross, of San Antonio, Texas. He was given a choice to retire or face disciplinary action. His retirement is official. Resigning in lieu of discipline was his best option. The Supreme Court of Texas reviewed his motion for acceptance of resignation and concluded that it was in the best interest of the public and the profession. And I say that because it just kind of irks me in a way. Like, I'm not sure if it irks you the same. Call into our show. Let's talk about it. The number you do that is 1-845-241-9962, or if your phone accepts 845-241-9962, you press a 1. Please do that, and that will get you into the radio show. And like I said, if you press the 1, you can talk live on the air with us. Remember, all these shows are recorded. They are archived, you name it, on Hidden Truth Revealed on Blog Talk Radio. Anyway, we're also going to talk, Phil says, let me tell you what he says about this, and we're going to bring him on pretty soon. I have no regrets about my decision to retire my license to practice law and cancel my membership in the State Bar of Texas. I have no interest in being associated with an organization that disregards the constitutional rights of its members, as I feel was done in the disciplinary process. On the bright side, there are advantages for not being a licensed attorney. We will hear more about that on our show tonight on Faces Radio. Right, Robin?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And just as a side note, we have nothing against Sony or Apple. If you want to buy into what they sell, please do. They're entertainment giants that are and computer whizzes, and you can get some good products by buying from those companies. There's nothing against
right, in respect, but you know, we're dealing with people that, you know, every penny counts, and a lot of them have had their money taken by the probate monsters. So if they didn't, they have the option just to listen with the little commercials in between. But yeah, I agree with you. There's lots of good things on Stone and Apple without a doubt. And if I could just also, Luann and Robin, mention two things to the two of you. A, you'll post that podcast that I was in, and also post the Zoom information, and I can send it to you if you don't have it on hand, the Zoom information for the Senate hearing tomorrow.
Yes, I'll have all those up there posted here tonight before we get off the air. I do have some of it on all my other ones, so yes, I'll go ahead and post that, and we'll definitely be joining in amongst everything else. We get a lot of information sending to us in every direction, so if I do not get back to you, I will sooner or later, so just hang in there. Anyway, we wanted to bring our guests on, Robin. Here we go.
Absolutely.
We've got a lot to talk about with former Philip Ross. I mean, he
former
is from
attorney, Philip.
Former attorney for former Philip. Former attorney of San Antonio, Texas, everybody. And remember, he was called the Maverick out there. And so we're going to bring him in. Phil, are you joining us tonight? Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you so much, John. We absolutely love the work that you did into guardianship, and I know that you were one of the very few attorneys that actually helped their client. And I mean, there's lots of articles in there calling you a scoundrel, you name it. I've read so much, and I'm sorry, but I have to just giggle on that one, because I've got to know you. I'm sure Hillary and a lot of the advocates have got to know you, and I don't feel that way at all. I'm sure Robin has his opinions, and everybody has. But that's my opinion. I just love the work that you did, and you worked so hard on telling the truth about the abuse of guardianship. And I know that you've had a lot of clients that you were working with. But do you want to just tell us why you got involved in guardianship? And all of a sudden, you are facing this disciplinary action. And it's like, you know, we've heard that a lot. We've heard that a lot with the attorney out in Florida. She was facing disciplinary action, Leslie Puerto Rico. She actually took retirement as well. We have a serious problem going on. All of our listeners, I want you to know, we have a problem going on with these attorneys stepping up and doing good for their clients. And just because some other people don't win, or if they do, the problem is that. Go ahead.
Well,
I'm going to leave that in Robin's hand. Sorry.
Now you take it from here, buddy.
I start getting kind of angry, you know.
but really, I think all of the advocates that are familiar with our show, or that have mm-hmm. followed us for a while, or just people that have followed our show for a while and understand how these situations develop and what's going on in our courts, recognize that one of the most dangerous things that an attorney can do in a probate court is to vigorously assist clients to protect their assets from being pilfered by attorneys who work with the probate court system. And if an attorney is successful in actually protecting their clients from the criminality, is how it looks to us, of some of the actions of probate court, that attorney soon gets targeted, much the same way that victims of probate court fraud are targeted, and the extortion that happens and the unethical standards that are applied to individuals that find themselves in those courts are often applied to attorneys. At least that's the way it appears to us. However, we're here to hear from someone who has more expertise about that than I do. So I'd like to invite you, Phil Roth, to comment on how your situation, what your situation was, how you got into the court system and lawyering, and then eventually got out of it, if you don't mind.
Okay, let me start at the beginning. I can remember when I was asked, along with all my other first-year law school students, why we were going to law school. And almost everybody in my class at St. Mary's University School of Law raised their hands. That's the entire first-year law school class back in 1981, saying that they were in law school because they wanted a career where they could make a lot of money. And there were two people in my class, including a medical doctor who was about retirement age. I think he was in his early 60s. And I raised our hands and said that we were in law school to get an education and to be able to function in the modern business world with the same background that attorneys have, so that we would be able to deal with the legal system, not necessarily just law, but to take advantage of the opportunity to equip ourselves with the tools we needed to be successful in whatever careers we became involved in. When I graduated from law school, I wasn't particularly anxious to start practicing law. In fact, I took the bar exam, or at least parts of it, three times before I became serious about getting licensed. And it wasn't until the fourth time taking the second part of the bar exam that I finally passed in 1988, about 4 years after I graduated from law school. And my motivation was that there was a political issue thing that I wanted to be involved in, including lawsuits that I anticipated. And I wanted to be involved as an attorney, partly because I could be more effective as a licensed attorney and also get paid for the time that I was spending in court defending my property rights and property rights of other people who were involved in a controversy over a proposed reservoir project in San Antonio. Ultimately, we succeeded in defeating the political issue, which was this proposed reservoir, and I was one of the only people to recover my property. I had a home site that the city of San Antonio condemned for this reservoir project. It was the first tract out of hundreds of tracts to be condemned, partly because I was going down to City Hall every week telling the city what a bad project this Applewhite Reservoir was. That was my first experience in the probate court, which in Texas, particularly in San Antonio, the probate court is where condemnation cases or eminent domain cases are channeled. And I met Judge Pauli Jackson Spencer early in her career, and she was the judge on the condemnation case that I ultimately got dismissed. And I was able to recover a substantial amount of money for my attorney's fees. Back then, $175,000 for 4 years of work on two cases was quite a bit of money, involving thousands of hours of billable time. And if I was not able to recover those fees, that would have been the approximate value of the time and expense that I had to incur defending my property rights and others. And I learned a lesson early on that you have to make money doing the right thing. Otherwise, you're going to be at a severe disadvantage, because the people that I was dealing with initially had all the money in the world. It's with government agencies, the city of San Antonio, and they could throw as much ability or as much effort into winning as it took, regardless of the cost. But as an individual, I operated on a shoestring for 4 years, but I was able to survive. But after that, I realized that it really takes a strong position to be able to fight for your rights. And we were just talking about property rights at that time. I also got involved in some cases involving federally protected civil rights. And early in my law career, I was engaged in a variety of civil rights actions, and I was fairly successful. But I found that as a young lawyer, a lot of times the judges would rule against me even though they were wrong. Either they abused their discretion or they didn't follow the law. And I was successful in winning a number of appeals on various civil rights cases and began to establish myself as a credible attorney, even though I was a sole practitioner. After about 20 years of practicing in a variety of areas, I got a call from a lady that was about to become the victim of a guardianship action. This was a lady that was in her mid-60s. She was fairly well-to-do. She had income from a trust that her mother had established for herself and her brother, and she was able to afford to live on her own in a fancy neighborhood in San Antonio and not worry about finances, until she and her brother decided to sue Falcon Bank, which was the trustee of this trust that her mother had set up for her and her brother. And the response of the trustee was to file an application to appoint a guardian for this lady. And she hired me over the weekend, on Labor Day weekend, about 12 years ago, after she had received notice that the very next day she was going to be the subject of a hearing to appoint a temporary guardian. And I advised her that from the very beginning, the very first hearing with such short notice, she could be cut off from any access to her finances, which would put her in a very precarious situation, because she would get a court-appointed lawyer, and she would not have the funds to retain a lawyer of her choice. And that was the beginning of my experience with guardianship. It took 4 years but I was able to help this client avoid even having a temporary guardian. And finally, her case got dismissed, and it was resolved with a less restrictive alternative, which was to establish a trust to manage her finances. And this was done, I helped her establish her own trust rather than having a court-appointed trustee take over her estate. And ultimately, I became the trustee of her trust. And I managed her trust for about 10 years until her money ran out. And then she became reliant on the trust that her mother had set up for her. But figuring out how to implement a less restrictive alternative than a guardianship was a lifesaver for this particular client, because she felt like she was pretty much in control of her life and her estate, not having a guardian making decisions for her, even though she had to deal with having a trustee and not having an entirely free hand to manage her own finances. I was less successful on a more recent guardianship situation, but part of the reason was that I was not able to get involved at the very beginning of the proceeding. Charlie Thrash already had a guardian appointed for his person and his estate when he and the guardian of his person, Laura Martinez, hired me to try and help him get out of the guardianship. I used my best efforts and did everything that I could think of to try and help Charlie and Laura keep their life and their family together. And in the process of litigating the guardianship for about 3 months in the beginning of 2019, Charlie's guardian, the guardian of his estate, had hired 5 lawyers to fight us and spent upwards of $500,000 within just a few months, stopping everything that we attempted to do. And the guardianship of Charlie Thrash was the subject of the Netflix documentary in 2020, which aired for about 6 months, and which told the story of what happened to Charlie Thrash and also what happened to another person that was subjected to a guardianship in Massachusetts. And the result of the Netflix documentary was a really widespread public awareness of the type of abuse that goes on affecting people that are subjected to guardianships when they do not need a guardian, that a guardianship is not justified, but who somehow cannot avoid having guardians appointed and taking advantage of them and their estates. The Netflix documentary was actually a very reserved public comment where both Netflix and myself and other people that were interviewed consciously refrained from making statements which could be construed as defamatory to anybody involved in the Thrash guardianship. Nevertheless, the attorney in Massachusetts who was scoundrel in the other person's case sued Netflix in 2020, and part of the settlement was to remove the guardianship documentary from publication. So after November of 2020, the only way that anybody could see that guardianship program was from a saved copy by a link that was available on the internet, if you could find it. Shortly after that lawsuit was resolved, Tanya Barina, who was the court-appointed guardian of Charlie Thrash's estate, sued Netflix, sued myself, sued the production company, and all of the people that were interviewed for the program, as well as others, in a multi-million-dollar defamation case, which is ongoing. Status of the case right now is that Netflix and I filed motions to dismiss the claim because it was motivated by our First Amendment and other protected state and federal civil rights. But the trial judge refused to dismiss the case against Netflix, which was the first one to go to a hearing, and Netflix appealed, and the Fourth Court of Appeals upheld the trial judge and refused to dismiss the claim. So now the Netflix appeal is pending at the Texas Supreme Court. And I have a feeling that the Texas Supreme Court is going to accept the petition for review and to issue an opinion sometime later this year. That's speculation at this point on my part, but I think it's just too interesting a case, and it's very timely. And there was so much publicity about the Netflix documentary that the justices of the Texas Supreme Court are going to have a hard time not getting involved and putting in their two cents. But I felt like in the last 10 years, since I probably should have retired, when it would have been practical for me from a financial standpoint to retire from my law practice, I have not been as successful as I wanted to be and as I needed to be working within the system to try to help people avoid being abused by the court system and the people that use the court system to abuse these people in the general category of guardianship abuse. The more I think about it, I tend to agree with the Texas Supreme Court, allowing me to retire and return my law license and withdraw from membership of the Texas Bar Association is in the public interest, because the court system, I feel, in Texas was failing to uphold the rights of both my clients and myself and other people in the probate system. The appeals that I filed in various cases were not successful by and large, and I felt like this was a dysfunctional situation as far as the court system was concerned. I feel like the court system was failing me and my clients and allowing perpetrators to engage in guardianship abuse. One of the interesting things about Charlie Thrash's case is that before he got into the guardianship, he and Laura were managing Charlie's financial affairs and living within his means. He had an adequate income of about $10,000 to $15,000 a month from rental properties and from engaging in his business as an automotive mechanic to live in a nice neighborhood, have all his bills already paid. He was very successful. He owned four rental properties, a $750,000 house in a nice neighborhood, planes, aircraft hangar, an amazing car and motorcycle and truck collection, and he had enough income to keep everything intact. Since Tanya Barina was appointed as the guardian of his estate, approximately a third to a half of his money is gone. Tanya Barina sold his house, sold his condominium, sold his airplane, sold his aircraft hangar, sold some of his best cars, just last year sold one of his rental properties, just to pay for the expenses, most of it going to lawyers and to caregivers, but not giving Charlie the same life and living standard and freedom that he had when he was living on his own with Laura. 2 years ago, I just saw the accounting for the expenses, and $525,000 was spent by the Guardian in 1 year, in 2021, ostensibly for Charlie's benefit. Last year, over $650,000 of his estate was spent. And this is a drain on his estate of about $250,000 to $300,000 a year currently. And this is only since 2019 when the Guardian was appointed. Charlie's estate went from $3 or $4 million down to a value of less than $2 million just in these few short years. Charlie is worse off, and he is losing ground as far as being able to maintain his living standard and the ability to provide for himself. And, you know, it's a real tragedy. And I was not able to help him using the legal system, but I think I can be more effective not being a licensed attorney, not having to follow all the standards of professional conduct that applies to lawyers, and help people avoid getting into the situation where they're in court. Because once they're in court, the chances of them avoiding a guardianship is really slim. But if they can prepare themselves and make themselves less vulnerable to being exploited, which there are many things that people can do to protect themselves and make themselves not as much of a target as the next person. And unfortunately,
can you talk about that, what people can do to protect themselves? I'm interested in that myself.
Well, there's a lot of money that people spend on estate planning, but it does not have to be expensive. There are very basic things like having a responsible person that has a power of attorney can avoid a situation that many people find themselves in that ultimately may lead to a guardianship. Having a power of attorney with somebody that you choose, that you know, and that you trust and that is trustworthy can save a person from a guardianship. That is because in some situations, if a person is too isolated, they can be more vulnerable to exploitation. And the courts oftentimes will step in and establish a guardianship where the only thing that would really be necessary would be to have a power of attorney, where you've got somebody that you can rely on to help you manage your finances. Medical power of attorneys are also important. And there's also a form in Texas that you can sign to designate a person who would be your guardian if you ever need one, and to exclude anybody that you do not want to be considered as a candidate for a guardianship. These three documents can be very helpful in many situations. Unfortunately, Charlie Thrash already had powers of attorney, and he had a will where he left his entire estate to Laura, who was his longtime companion. In my opinion, they were common law spouses, but the court did not agree with us. Charlie had gone to a reputable law firm and done his estate planning, but unfortunately, he maintained too much control over his own finances and did not leave Laura any financial ability to protect him when he was put under a temporary guardianship and removed from having any control over his finances. What he needed to have done was to either have put enough of his property into a trust and appointed Laura or somebody that he trusted to be the trustee and taken those assets out of his estate and put them out of reach of a court in the event that he might end up in court in a guardianship proceeding. Having your assets in a trust removes them from your immediate control. And I'm not talking about a trust where somebody just appoints themselves as a trustee of their estate. I'm talking about a trust where you actually appoint another individual to have the ultimate decision-making authority on how to manage your property or your benefit, but in a separate entity, which is this inter vivos trust that you can create. And this can be a very basic, simple document. Trusts that I drafted were only 4 or 5 pages long. And the important thing is to put a responsible person that knows you and is going to make decisions that are going to be in your best interest. If Charlie had done that, it would have made it a lot more difficult for the court to tax his estate to pay the lawyers that he was fighting to avoid having a guardianship.
Right.
Other things that you can do are to distribute some of your assets to the people that you care about and that you love and that love you, so that they have some financial ability to come to your assistance if you need their help, and that there's less motivation for somebody to attack you and attack your estate because you're not alone.
Right.
It's unfortunate that a lot of successful people maintain total control over their estates when they really don't need to, and when it's not even to their advantage, to their own security, to have total control. Because sooner or later, we all become vulnerable, and we need to think about it at a time when we have all of our wits about us and when we're strong, so that we can prepare for a time when we can't necessarily take care of ourselves by ourselves.
Right.
Basic thoughts about preparing yourself for a situation where you could become a victim unwittingly.
Right. And the problem with some of that, though, I found out through a lot of our conversations on our radio show that a lot of people have all that done, but somehow they land in a probate court and then the judge rules over the trust and everything. And that's what happened to us in our case. So if there's some way that you can avoid a probate altogether, that's the way to go. But it doesn't really guarantee you all that in our situation, is that we had powers of attorneys. We had all that, and they still managed to get in there, and everything was appointed to a public administrator, and that she took care of everything from our estate. So, you know, I talk a lot about trust and wills, and sometimes I throw my hands up in the air because on one hand, you're told to do a trust. On the other hand, to don't do a trust. And on the other hand, there's so much controversy. But the problem is if you end up into a probate court, that's when the problems start, right?
Well, once you get into court, the judge has an incredible amount of power. And if the judge is inclined to disregard your rights and disregard what's in your best interest, he has the do that, whether it's right or wrong. And if you do not have any access to your own finances to defend yourself, you're at an extreme disadvantage. And the estate planning is not foolproof. And a lot of times the court will just routinely, as a matter of course, set aside your power of his attorney and appoint a temporary guardian.
Right.
And this is very unfortunate, even though the law says that the court has to consider less restrictive alternatives than something as draconian as a guardianship can be. And there are a lot of less restrictive alternatives. Powers of attorney, assisted living, trusts are all alternatives to having someone else just come in and take control over your life and your property. Fortunately, the legal system is evolving very slowly to recognize the civil rights of vulnerable people, including senior citizens, but also including anybody at any age that gets involved in a traffic accident or a severe illness and is temporarily incapacitated so they can't take care of themselves. They don't want to be put into a situation where somebody else, oftentimes a stranger or a professional guardian, just takes over their life. And, you know, there are things that people need to be aware of, is that some of the times your own family can be your worst enemy. It's not strangers that come into guardianship situations most of the time. It's people that you've had a relationship their whole lives, and they may be jealous of your success, as in Charlie's case. His estranged family, distant relatives, had the authority or were given the authority by the court to take over Charlie's life. You need to keep those people away.
Yeah.
Do whatever you have to do to prevent them from taking advantage of you when you when your defenses are down.
Right, you know. And the thing about all this, this whole case about the Netflix and all the different series that are going on, it's a shame in a way that, you know, the guardianship of, you know, the guardianship tactics and all that, you know, did show precedence of what was really going on with Charlie. But I just feel that something could have been done better, not exposing that part. I mean, the guardianship abuse is serious stuff, no matter who it is about, because we hear stories all the time, Phil, about guardianship abuse, for-profit guardianship, and it's a cottage industry. And, I mean, what can we do as a society? What do you think? Just keep exposing it? What's the best way to do this? Because I know tomorrow we're having a big Senate hearing down at the Senate going down on Washington, D.C., but what's the best way to expose this? I mean, we're trying to do it through Netflix. We're trying to do it through, you know, media. What's your take on that?
Well, everybody needs to be involved in advocating for what they believe is right and what they believe is in the best interest of individuals as well as our whole society and culture. And unfortunately, there is a very serious lack of respect for civil rights in this country, particularly against older people. Older people have earned the right to have respect, but in so many situations when they become vulnerable, members of their family or strangers that are just looking for an opportunity to exploit a vulnerable person don't have respect for the rights of individuals. And if you don't fight for your own rights, if you don't protect yourself, there's not any organization that is going to likely protect you against an aggressive effort backed by lawyers and courts to take away your property and take away your liberty. So people need, the first thing people need to do is to educate themselves about their rights and to develop an appreciation for the rights that people have fought for throughout the history of this country. I forget who it was that said that the price of liberty is constant vigilance, but it's so true. And a lot of people do not put enough stock in personal security. They need to start thinking ahead, and this is an educational process. Part of the educational process is just becoming aware of the danger. We all hear horror stories about immediate situations, but until people become aware of guardianship abuse, they're not going to be motivated to do anything to protect themselves. The other part of the educational process is there need to be professional people and self-educated people that take the responsibility and take the action to help develop a consciousness, a general consciousness in our society of what it takes for older people to be able to maintain their self-reliance to the extent of their ability for as long as they can. You know, there's people take the American dream for granted in many cases. And they think, you know, if you work hard, you save enough money or invest enough assets to be able to retire financially in comfort, that you're okay. But, you know, it takes more than that. You have to be able at an older age to defend yourself against people that want to take advantage of you. And it's only going to become worse. There's a huge problem with criminal human trafficking that is becoming more prevalent in this country than it has been in the past. And that's partly because the world is becoming more interconnected. And some of the things that people in other countries, countries in the East and in Africa and, you know, other places where there's serious discrimination, there's serious organized crime, attitudes towards the rights of human beings are not like they are in this country. But those elements are becoming more and more entrenched in America. And so in the future, we're going to have an even more challenging situation as we work to protect the life and liberty of older Americans.
Yeah, that's the biggest issue I've ever seen, is protecting the elderly and the families trying to protect the elderly. It's becoming a huge thing. I've never seen anything quite like it. I know that you worked many years, for these science stuff, and then all of a sudden you're kind of like facing disciplinary action. How did all that come to be as well? I mean, you know, before you know it, you're working and all of a sudden you started getting complaints or something like that. Can you talk a little bit about that? Feel freely what you talk about.
Yes, I didn't really realize until I became the victim of malicious grievances that were filed with the Texas Bar Association by other attorneys against me, and also by legal opponents that were unhappy with my involvement in what they wanted to consider their business. The Texas Bar Association has a procedure where anybody can file a grievance against an attorney, and the Bar Association will investigate. There is no protection for the lawyer against malicious and false grievances. In fact, the person that is filing the grievance is absolutely immune from any claim by the lawyer that he's being defamed or that he's had false and malicious charges being brought against him by an individual. It's not like complaining to a policeman, where if you make a false complaint, you're actually committing a crime by making a false complaint. With the disciplinary system that is enforced by the Bar Association against attorneys, the person that makes a complaint has no potential liability. In my case, there were 5 grievances filed, and I know the persons that filed them did not file them on their own. They were assisted by attorneys that were not happy having to deal with me in court on various cases. most of them having to do with guardianship and probate matters. And the Bar Association appeared to be motivated to take these malicious retaliatory grievances and use them as a basis for finding fault with the way I conducted myself in my law practice. And I would think every year when I would be taking continuing education courses, which attorneys are required to take 15 hours of continuing education every year, and three or four of those hours have to involve education about ethics and professional conduct. And I would always think, you know, that is vulnerable. If somebody wants to really dig into the way they conduct themselves, they can find fault with just about anybody. And once you come into the radar and there's a group of people that are trying to remove you from the profession, from law practice, it's a very dangerous situation. And once the Bar Association begins a disciplinary action, they have developed ways that they can prevent you from having a jury trial. And one of the last protections that people have against arbitrary punishment is to have a jury decide what the facts are. The Bar Association in Texas pursues a procedure where they get a partial summary judgment in a disciplinary case. Even if the attorney demands a jury, the judge can decide that there are no genuine issues of material fact, that the attorney has violated some disciplinary rule. And in each of the three cases that were brought against me, the judge granted a partial summary judgment. Actually, two mm-hmm. of the cases. The third one was, there'd already been an application for a partial summary judgment, but it hadn't been ruled on yet. And then once the judge decides that she is going to grant partial summary judgment and find that as a matter of law that the attorney has violated some disciplinary rule, then the judge sets a hearing for sanctions. And this is a non-jury hearing. So the attorney is never given the opportunity to prove the facts that and defend himself and let a jury decide what those facts are. And in each of my cases, it was obvious to me that the judge was being arbitrary because the evidence at the summary judgment stage showed that there were genuine issues of material fact, and it was an abuse of discretion for the judge to decide when I demanded a jury trial. And I was able to forestall the final hearings in each of these cases for many years. The first cases were filed back in 2019, and they were just going to come to a hearing this spring. And, you know, I was able to file appeal on one case that delayed the trial court for over a year while the appeal was decided. The other cases were going slowly. And this was very unusual because most disciplinary actions are required to be completed within 6 months, and mine dragged out for two or three years. And in the process, I know the Bar Association spent a lot of attorney time and effort and, you know, whatever they had to pay the lawyer to litigate, but they never collected a dime or they never got a final ruling on their disciplinary action, because I was able to short-circuit the whole process at the very end by voluntarily resigning in lieu of discipline. And it's only speculation what the discipline would have been, confident that the judge, the first opportunity the judge had, they were going to either suspend me from the practice of law or revoke my license. And I wanted to avoid that action because my license wasn't worth that much to me at this point. I was not willing to agree to any settlement that would require me to be suspended. The Bar Association wanted to suspend me for 5 years and then let me get licensed again. But, you know, I'm 73 years old, and it took a lot to convince me that practicing law was not the most effective way to fight guardianship abuse and help people avoid guardianships. Because I get bogged down in a case trying to help one family or one individual and the people that cared about them instead of focusing on the bigger picture. And I'm in a position now where, you know, I can't get bogged down. People can't contact me and say, hey, I want you to be my lawyer and spend all this time and money and end up not getting paid and sometimes not be successful in really helping them because I'm not licensed to practice law anymore and I'm not going to engage in the unlawful practice of law. You know, I'm realizing that there are more effective ways to bring about social change and to help people defend themselves than to be their lawyer. And that's partly because of the conditions in the courts in this country or in Texas today. I feel like Charlie Thrash was completely let down by the court system.
Yeah.
And, you know, even worse than that, I think, you know, the judges that were involved, Judge Tom Rakoff and Judge Oscar Kazin, were actually complicit or enabling in the abuse that Charlie's been subjected to. And it's not just Charlie. I mean, his whole family, Laura Martinez and her adult children, their whole family was broken up and their lives were turned upside down.
And, yeah.
And you
yeah,
know,
that
if
happened.
I could just...
Go ahead, Hillary.
Thanks, Gwen. And I just like to make a statement and ask you just brief questions, Mr. Ross. So we have in Florida, we have two attorneys, and it's basically carbon copy of what's happening or what happened to you. They are, you know, sole practitioners running their firm. Both of them practice other types of law, but, you know, because of the type of people that they are, they started to take guardianship cases. And lo and behold, there's a bar complaint made. And what seems like is a open and closed case, you know, to their advantage, it's like a Chinese legend. It goes on for years and years and years. So one attorney, I can mention her name, Leslie Federicos, who's helped a lot of people get out of guardianship, you know, she was being terrorized, and she had to do, basically was pushed into doing the same thing. She retired permanently from the Florida bar, and another attorney in Florida who has a practice on her own, they are doing the same thing. But my question to you is, if you retire from the Texas State Bar or whatever it's called, similar to the one attorney down here that retired permanently from the Florida Bar, can you still practice law without being a member of that club, the Bar Association?
Technically, you cannot practice law in any way that violates the penal code, which provides protections to the public against the unlawful practice of law. The unlawful practice of law can be against the public interest, particularly when unscrupulous people engage in activities involve the practice
correct.
Of law for bad yeah. purposes.
Right. But
there are other ways
Mr.
that people can
go ahead,
advocate.
Phil.
There are other ways that people can advocate for justice using the legal system. one of the ways that I'm discovering is that an individual who is not licensed to practice law can actually transfer a claim or a cause of action to themselves. It's like buying somebody else's rights or buying somebody else's claim and then pursuing those rights, representing yourself as the owner of those rights after you've negotiated a transfer and given notice to all parties. And that's the way I'm dealing with a couple of situations where I was jointly involved, or I am jointly involved in a couple of lawsuits with other parties that I was representing. And now that I've had to withdraw from representing those other parties, they have decided that they cannot afford to continue the case because they don't have the legal training and experience to be able to advocate for themselves in court. So what we did was negotiate a transfer of their claim to me, and I can go into court representing myself. And I have an advantage as a non-lawyer because I can be both the advocate and the witness and the claimant. And this is something that lawyers are prevented from doing. For instance, a lawyer who is a necessary witness in a case cannot also be the attorney in the case, and he can be disqualified by his opposition because he is a witness and the attorney. And the reason for that is that the courts have decided that it'd be too confusing for a jury to have the attorney testifying about the facts in the case. Attorneys can argue, but they're not supposed to be witnesses. But as a non-attorney, if I get a claim that's transferred to me, I can represent myself as both the advocate and the claimant and the witness.
That's brilliant.
And this can be a huge advantage. And
yes,
I just read
awesome.
A case called McCloskey versus San Antonio Traction Company from 1917, more than 100 years ago, where the court granted temporary injunction against somebody that had bought a claim and was litigating that claim. And the court said, that may have been the law in England a long time ago, but it's never been the law in Texas. And anybody in Texas can buy any kind of property, including a legal action or a cause of action or a claim. And then they can prosecute that claim as their own property. And they can
That's
go to court and
Gerard,
act as their own
you're
lawyer.
Doing it, you're doing it in the good way. There is a case very quickly in Pinellas County in Florida. A guardian, a for-profit guardian, she won a judgment of $160,000 against a daughter of a ward in guardianship. This guardian gets arrested before she collects on the judgment. And what she did in a bad way was she sold that judgment to an attorney, a collections attorney, who now who took this daughter's home. But the way you're doing it, being the good person that you are, is, I mean, honestly, absolutely rocket science, because you will be able to, you know, fight for yourself, which is actually fighting for the cause, which is, you know, whatever was done to the party. So that is just brilliant.
Yeah.
Another thing that I've become more aware of since I returned my license to practice law is that it can be a real handicap to a lawyer to be constrained by the rules of professional conduct and the fear that your enemies are going to get the attention of the Bar Association and have a grievance pursued against you for disciplinary action. Not being a lawyer, I'm not subject to the rules of professional conduct that apply to lawyers. And, you know, if you read over all the rules of professional conduct and disciplinary procedure, it can be a big advantage to not be a lawyer if you know what you're doing and be able to advocate in court, particularly representing your own interests. But even more effective, I think, is going to be the opportunity for public education, because the amount of experience that I have and the training and education which I have acquired, and also the notoriety from my involvement in high-profile cases, particularly including the Netflix documentary on the Thrash guardianship, that should give me a basis for attracting attention and being able to be effective as a public advocate against guardianship and for protecting individual rights and liberties. And if I can get people's attention and give them good information where they can help themselves, that can be more effective than trying to defend a few people after they've already been subjected to a guardianship and lost all their rights.
Right, prevention, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we talk a lot about that. Of, you know, we're starting to write a book here, and we're talking about prevention and how to try to stay out of courts and all that. That's a big deal, because a lot of people don't understand what happens if you get into a probate court, and trying to stay out of one is really impossible now. But I paint, I got a dog at their barking. But I think education is so important on what's going on in our courtroom today, that I think that you could be even more effective that way than you could be an attorney nowadays, because I'm telling you, attorneys are just as big of a target nowadays as victims are. You know, I've been watching them one after another, you know, like Leslie Federico and you, and we've had like maybe 10 attorneys on our show that have had to take disciplinary action, and they all had to go into retirement. So I do believe,
and we've met others. I mean,
when we went with the
Judicial Review
Performance Commission.
They did a kind of a tour of Colorado, and they appeared in 10 different cities to listen to the concerns of the citizenry. This has been a few years back, and we went to 7 out of the 10 meetings that were convenient for us, and. And the at those meetings, on 3 different occasions, I recall attorneys who came in, and they were either attorneys or former attorneys, who said attorneys who do any kind of vigorous protection of their client in a courtroom where the kind of, you know, unethical standard is being upheld, repercussions, because they're liable to find themselves retaliated upon by the judge. The judge has such power over attorneys in their area that, you know, their cases can be moved to the end of the docket. The judge can rule against them when really by all rights they ought to rule for them. They discover that by trying to stand up for their clients, as they've been hired to do, oftentimes the inequities in the court system put them in a position where they were unable to do the job that they wanted to do, which was they were unable to look after their clients, and they also found that they were unable to continue the practice of law with integrity in the court system as it is in Colorado. This is in the state of Colorado. This is a Judicial Performance Commission in Colorado. And as far as I can tell, things have not really gotten better. It appears that the powers that be in the judiciary in Colorado, there's no more visibility about what goes on behind the closed doors of the judicial system than there ever has been. It's a black hole on the other side of that door. And any time activists get together and say, "Hey, look, we've really got some inequities in this court system. We've got to face the fact that there's corruption in our courts, and we've got to deal with it." And they try to put together and pass any kind of legislation that even just mildly mediates the damage that is done by unethical practices in court. Even something as simple as saying, hey, when a person is in guardianship, if they are moved, the family should be notified. If they're, you know, if their home is moved, or if they die, the family needs to be notified. You know, right away would be the only real ethical answer to that. And even when we wanted to have people notified when their family member was either moved or died under guardianship, even that was opposed to the point where the bar wanted to say, well, let's make it 30 days that we have to notify the family. And then it was argued, no, that's ridiculous. Let's make it 7 days. And even that was opposed when it came time for a vote, and that legislation was unable to be passed in Colorado. There's just, it's astounding how much protection unethical practices in court have in Colorado, or by the legislature and the Senate. They just do not seem to display any real concern for the victims. And there's individuals that we have met with, that we've talked with, that have worked with us to try to get change, and it's really an uphill battle. But they also face tremendous opposition. I don't know if it's because so many of the senators and congressmen are lawyers themselves, or it's because they're getting a lot of money from lawyers who are involved in the unethical practices. But for whatever reason, justice eludes us in the courts in Colorado to a ridiculous degree. And I know it's not just Colorado, because we have this radio show where we're talking to people all over the nation and the world every week, and have been for years, that tell us that, well, it's here too, it's here too, it's here too.
So it's absolutely. You know, we listen to stories all the time. So Phil, so you're into official retirement now. So when you go into official retirement, all that disciplinary action then goes away, right?
That's right.
So you're completely out of it. There's no more to be heard about, nothing, right?
Not as far as being a practicing lawyer.
Right.
I'm not subject to the rules of disciplinary procedure that are enforced against lawyers in Texas by the Texas Bar Association or the Texas Supreme Court. I'm a free agent, and I can expose the legal system in Texas based on my experience that it's very much a closed organization for the benefit of its members. And, you know, it's the members that go along to get along. And the whole legal system is so intertwined, from the legislature to the court system to the 50 or 60,000 practicing lawyers in the state of Texas, who all scratch each other's back. And a free radical, which I considered myself to be on the opposite side of a lot of people that I ran into in the legal profession that were working against, a person like me cannot be tolerated within the system because it's too disruptive. In the Thrash case, I felt like I was doing everything I could for a few months trying to extricate Charlie from the guardianship. I filed pleadings, and the judge complained about the volume of paperwork that he had to read that I was filing. And the other side used my actions as a predicate or a pretext for them to charge Charlie's estate probably $500,000 or more in just a period of a few months, and claiming that I made them do it. The judge in that case, I would tell them, look, you don't need to spend that much time and money fighting against me, because the court can very efficiently stop what I was trying to do without exposing Charlie's estate to such extreme expense. But
right.
The court system is set up for attorneys to make money and to be in charge and to have control. And judges seem to just love the control and the power that they have. And, you know, they do just about anything to protect their power and authority.
Right.
So I'm going to have to work from the outside, and I've still got plenty of energy and plenty of interest in trying to do good work, that I'm motivated to continue my efforts, but to be more effective and, you know, not get bogged down in individual cases.
Right.
And I think, you know, it's every person that wants to be free has a personal responsibility to themselves and the people they care about. And we can't afford to be naive about trusting the system or having faith in the institutions that are supposed to be working for our best interest. We have to be realistic, and we have to open our eyes and get everybody that we know to open their eyes and stop being ignorant about the challenges to our lives and our liberties. And if we don't defend ourselves, I don't know who's going to defend us.
Exactly.
Right. Well, on behalf of myself and just about every other advocate that I know that's been in this battle, I want to welcome you to the ranks of those who are not associated with legal profession, who are battling the corruption therein.
Right. You know, it's such a shame to know that our judicial system is just not working on the behalf of clients anymore, on vulnerable citizens or, you know, disabled citizens, and not even for some attorneys that are in the bar nowadays. But I believe that you're actually going to do better without all that. I mean, maybe it was a godsend after all.
I think so. I mean, I try and maintain a positive outlook, and I don't want to waste my time, you know, like some people do. They take personal offense that they've been slighted. And, you know, my law license was, it paid for itself, paid for my education. And, you know, I did it for almost 35 years and was successful enough to be proud of my reputation and the work I did. But there's a lot more things to life than, you know, one phase of our individual lives. And I hope to be vigorous enough and live long enough to have many pursuits starting now.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It sounds like
you.
And we'd like to call on you from now on, you know, from time to time and ask questions if we could, because we get a lot of people that come to us from Texas and all over the cross nation that, you know, want to have some answers, and sometimes we just don't know what to say, you know. So I usually go and talk to attorneys or some former attorneys. They know the law, you know. They can't go on other cases, but they sure can talk about what, you know, what a trust is, what a will is, and all that. I'm really glad that you got out of that whole issue. Now, so the Netflix cases still go on, everything still goes on, and that continues so as well, right?
Yes, and, you know, I was pretty amazed that Tanya Barina decided, and her attorneys decided to file the defamation case against Netflix and myself and others, because she pretty much had it made without stirring the pot. The court was able to sideline Charlie's most aggressive advocates, including myself and Laura Martinez, and, you know, by sanctioning us and ordering us to pay as much as $300,000 of the bills that Charlie's estate got from his guardian's attorneys back in 2019.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were enjoined from having any contact with Charlie Thrash or coming within 500 feet of him. And,
right.
you know, there wasn't anything we could really do without risking contempt of court and, you know, jail time.
Yeah.
So for her to sue Netflix over a bogus defamation claim just reopened that whole issue. And I think Netflix is going to have an opportunity, or somebody will, to tell the backstory behind the Thrash guardianship and what happened, you know, after the guardians took over and then wrongfully accused Netflix of defaming them.
The whole Netflix documentary
was very tame compared to the trial that there may be on the defamation case, where all the witnesses will have immunity to tell the truth and can't be sued for what they say in court, where they can be sued for what they say in a publication like the Dirty Money series.
Yeah. You know, the whole thing is, I think the saddest thing of all about all of this stuff, and I'm not on any side of it, you know, who did right, who did wrong. The whole thing that upsets me the most of all is that Charlie Thrash, where is his social life? I mean, what happened to any of that? You know, I know he was loved by his family, and I hear these stories repeatedly, how the husbands or wives are torn apart. I've got hundreds, literally hundreds of phone calls constantly coming to me nonstop. You know, our organization here, you know, my husband's being separated, my wife's being separated, my child's being separated all day long. Why do these people have to be so isolated and can't talk to the loved one? That's my biggest beef of everything about this. Is how do you feel about that? I mean, people need to have a social life. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I mean, Charlie's whole life was turned upside down and taken away from him. The same thing happened to Shelley Thompson in New Braunfels, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
She was put into Colonial Manor Nursing Home. Stevens ordered me not to have any contact with her. She's confined to a room in a memory care facility that, you know, would drive a normal person crazy because she doesn't belong there. She is totally aware and totally has the capacity to understand what's happening to her and to feel like she's being robbed of her liberty and all her opportunity to be a productive citizen and a healthy, happy person. And there's really nothing that anybody can do to help her at this point get out of that guardianship because the state of Texas won't let anybody visit her and won't let anybody advocate for her. And the state is immune from being sued for all the atrocious things they're doing. It's a real terrible situation, and people need to understand that, you know, we have given, or the legislature has given, the power to the state to take away our liberty without any recourse if we allow them to continue to do that. And it can happen to anybody. If it can happen to Shelley, it can happen to anybody.
Luann, are you there?
Okay, I'm here. Sorry
okay.
about that. I was on mute. I was trying to suck on a cough drop. But I just wanted to say that we really liked Shelley Thomas. I mean, I've had long conversations with her, and she does not seem like she's incapacitated to me whatsoever. She is a smart woman. And the way she talks about it down there, about how she doesn't get out for exercise, you know, I just feel so sorry for these people. No one should have to live like that. I don't care who it is. Everybody has a right to be with their loved ones, their families, their pastors, whatever. That's the whole problem I have with this whole guardianship abuse, not to mention the estates that are being depleted from, you know, from the families, and families count on happening. And all this is taken away. Go ahead, Rob, I'm screaming over here to talk to him.
Well, you asked the question that I just think, you know, there's a very clear answer. You said Why do they isolate these people?
Why?
And, of course, the answer is the same reason why the Supreme Court exempted themselves from the Colorado Open Records Act.
Yeah.
It's so that they have darkness in which to operate. It's so that people do not see and hear the voices of the victims. It's so that they can oppress a person, lock them in a facility, lock them away from their loved ones. Well, if no one can communicate with them, then they can make whatever claims they want about that person. Oh, they're incapacitated. Oh, they can't do anything for themselves. Oh, it's, you know, we're taking good care of them, and no one can prove otherwise. But the minute you let someone in, the minute somebody has a chance to talk to them, they say, dear God, can you please get me out of this prison? It's a hellhole. They're starving me. They're torturing me. They're beating me. You know, whatever is happening, now the truth can come out. So they don't want that. So they hide behind the anonymity of locking that person away. And it is absolutely criminal, but there's the answer to your question.
It happened to my mom because we would go down and see my mom, Phil, and we would see my mom once in a while when we weren't supposed to see her, and we'd go to a hospital or something, and we would sneak up in there, and we would see her, and she goes, you found me. She goes, I don't know where you've been. Why have you been hiding from me? Why don't you want to talk to me anymore? And we're like, Mom, the courts are doing that. I'm sorry. The attorneys are doing that. But it's not us, and she was so happy to know that we weren't doing that against her. I think that's a crime in itself.
Absolutely.
That's why I speak so much about this out to my dentist, to the doctors, to the legislators, to people down the street, you know, to people in the
store. Sheriff's office who threatened to lock us up. The police who threatened to lock us up.
Anyway, you know, and I just got some really good news from Melinda Arters. She said that there was an Arizona, see, this is in Arizona. She said that Arizona Adult Guardianship and Trust Fraud Prevention, there's a reform bill, SB 1291, passed House Judiciary Committee unanimously. And she says this Arizona bill, 1291, was heard in the Arizona House Judiciary Committee this morning. The hearing room was filled with supporters who were captured on the video of the meeting. They were asked to stand by the committee chairman so that all the committee members could clearly see how many supporters and advocates come to voice their support for moving the bill forward. So, and this were given, which lead to questions enabling challenges such as the closure of courtrooms by judges to non-case litigants, the lack of sunshine on the cases and records, the banning of the media in the courtrooms, the emphasis that a jury trial is demanded by the Seventh Amendment of the Constitution, and that the courts belong to the people, juries, not controlled by whims of the judges and attorneys. He said leading this campaign is Mrs. Sherry Lund, a press release detailing today's committee approval and forthcoming shortly. This move is the bill forward in the session's process. She goes, now remember, focus on the Constitution. Well, this is really good news that this happened out in Arizona today. And tomorrow we also have the Senate committee out there in Washington, D.C. Now, I know that Rick Black and his wife, Terry, are out there in Washington, D.C. tomorrow. And also Ray Contreras is going out there. He's out there already, so I'm going to try to get a hold of him to give us an update on what's going on up there. I think he flew up there on the whim of the moment. And Hillary, I think she'll be coming back on
and
to talk about this.
While he was there, he's been knocking on doors. I saw an interesting photograph of him on Facebook with Representative Ocasio-Cortez.
Yes, yeah.
I'm
going to get him and try to get him into a text to find out what's going on with that. But, you know, to our listeners, we do have movement going on. There is movement going on in many states. I know in Colorado there's some depressing news out here. We've had three bills that gone into legislation given judges more not accountability, you know, it's
giving judges less accountability.
But this keeps things going on. We've got a group out here working it, and to me, I don't think it's getting any better. But let's bring Hillary back on. Hillary, I see that you faded off and you're back.
I know. I don't know what happened there, but magically I am back, thank goodness. And what an awesome show. And Phil, Mr. Ross, I mean, we are forever indebted to you. I mean, it would be so easy to walk away, you know, in the sunlight or the moonlight, and, you know, that would be that. But you are still fighting the fight for people that you might not ever meet, but you will. You are still doing them a huge service. And as far as Miss Barino and the slander suit, the only person that slandered her was herself. I mean, that Netflix Dirty Money thing, you know, she just, I mean, she was the one who spilled all the beans about what she was doing, but more, so much more importantly, thank you for all you do. And if we can do anything to assist you, please reach out and we will be there or help in any way, shape, or form that we can, because you're a rock star. Thank you.
We feel that big time. And, you know, we wouldn't mind bringing you back to the radio show every now and then, you know, maybe to talk about, I know you can't talk about how, you know, to give anybody any wisdom or anything about court cases, but as a unlicensed, knowledgeable former attorney, I'm sure that you can come back every now and then and tell us what you're up to. I mean, we'd love to hear from you. And, gosh, I just really appreciate you coming on to the radio show.
Well, I appreciate it, too. And, you know, I think networking the way we do and publicizing the issues and our opinions and, you know, good common sense advice for people to help themselves, that's a really valuable asset. And I would like to come back and update you on the status of the defamation case.
Yes.
Anybody that's interested in reading the pleadings in that case, Netflix filed an excellent petition for review by the Texas Supreme Court. Tanya Barina's attorneys filed a response, and in a few weeks, Netflix is going to file their reply. But just reading the pleadings can give you a little bit of the flavor of what the tactic is to try and silence the opponents of guardianship abuse. It's a really interesting case, and because Netflix is involved and Netflix is standing up for its right to publish their Dirty Money series and expose guardianship abuse, it's going to have an interesting outcome no matter what the Supreme Court does.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
and so we you know, like to talk more about this. I know we have hundreds of thousands of people that constantly come to us and ask us about this case and the guardianship movie and why it's not on and all kinds of issues. And, you know, and I hope they listen to this broadcast and they just stay tuned to find out what's going on, you know, with us. We're going to open our phone lines up here in a few minutes. Anytime now, the number to call in is 845-241-9962. You press A1. 845-241-9962. You press A1.
And that allows you to know that you have a question or comment.
Yeah, press
when
A1.
You press A1, that raises your hand, and we can bring you on to the show. And
I know that Dean Sowers was going to call in to see if – was going to call in and read a poem. Let me see if I can get a hold of him real quick. It was really a decent poem. I wanted to see if he wanted to do that. I think that might be him. Let me see. Okay, is this Dean?
Yes.
Oh, there you are. I found him. Okay. We talked to Dean earlier. Welcome to the show, by the way, Dean. He is a veteran, and he wanted to – what was it, a Korean veteran?
I want to say that when we volunteered or served our country in the military, we didn't realize that we were enabling people to abuse citizenry like this. But I came across a poem entitled, I Am a Veteran. And I was so moved by this poem. You know, most of my experience has been with World War II veterans. This poem applies to all veterans. And I would like to share with the people listening into your program.
Please do.
A poem by Andrea Christensen Brett, B-R-E-T-T, entitled, I Am a Veteran. You may not know me the first time we meet. I'm just another you meet on the street, but I am the reason you walk and breathe free. I'm the reason for your liberty. I am a veteran. I work in the local factory all day. I own the restaurant just down the way. I sell you insurance. I start your IV. I've got the best looking grandkids you'll ever see. I'm your grocer, your baker. I'm your plumber, your barber, your family preacher. But there's a part of me you don't know very well. Just listen a moment. I have a story to tell. I am a veteran. I joined the service while still in my teens. I traded my prom dress for camouflage greens. I'm the first in my family to do something like this. I followed my father like he followed his. Defying my fears and hiding my doubt, I married my sweetheart before I shipped out. I missed Christmas, then Easter, the birth of my son, but I knew I was doing what had to be done. I served on the battlefront. I served on the base. I bound up the wounded and begged for God's grace. I gave orders to fire commands. I marched into conflict in far distant lands, in the jungle, the desert, on mountains and shores, in bunkers, in tents, on dark, dank, earthen floors. While I fought on the ground, in the air, on the sea, my family and friends were home praying for me. For the land of the free and the home of the brave, I faced my demons in foxholes and caves. Then one dreaded day, without drummer or fife, I lost an arm. My buddy lost his life. I came home and moved on, but forever was changed. The perils of war in my memory remained. I don't really say much. I don't really feel like I can. But I left home a child and came home a man. There are thousands like me, thousands more who are gone, but their legacy lives as time marches on, white crosses in rows and names carved in queue remind us of what these brave souls have to do. I'm part of a fellowship, a strong, mighty band of each man and each woman who has served this great land. And when those glory waves, I stand proud. I stand tall. I helped keep her flying over you, over all. I am a veteran. Today is Vietnam Veterans Day.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that. That's beautiful. That's absolutely beautiful. Wow. That's a lot to ingest, right, Robin? That was good. It's beautiful.
It was quite beautiful. Thank you. Vietnam Veterans Day is today.
Yeah. We're going to stay on with this, Dean, and we're going to bring in another caller. It's 210 number?
Yes.
You're live on the air on Faces Radio?
Hi, Luanne. This is Laura Martinez-Thrash.
Hi, Laura.
Hi, Laura. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I would like to start off by saying thank you to all the advocates. I'd like to, mainly the reason I'm calling is to let you know that we're very confident that the war isn't over. Bill is tirelessly fighting, and I think that the way that he sees this organization of lawyers that sponsors and associates each other with providing, you know, the best interest for humanity is embarrassing, you know.
Yeah.
Enabling, facilitating, and going beyond that, the first judge, Tom Rickoff, literally stood there and smirked at the opposition, attorney William Wehner, and said, well, Charlie doesn't even need a guardianship, but I'm putting him into one anyway. And William Wehner, the attorney, said, aw, come on, give us a guardianship of the person as well as the estate. And he said, no way, Charlie will die. So the second lawyer, the second judge, prohibited Charlie from speaking out to defend himself against this whole procedure. And he was trying to gain his aid because he thought that he was more fair, more just. But as we realized, they were all cohorts. My whole point for calling, more than just, you know, letting you know that we've experienced, from Frostbank, we experienced the discrimination of the relationship age difference between Charlie and myself. Number two, every time I walked in there, I told Charlie, I said, I feel this horrible, like, the way they stare me down, mostly white employees, but even, like, the Hispanics were looking at me kind of weird. And I would speak out to Charlie, I was outraged by it. And when Adult Protective Services came by and said, no, it sounds to me like you and Charlie are okay. You just need to keep all of these documents handy. You'll need them someday. We went through attorney. One of them was a United States senator. I mean, a Texas senator, Carlos Uresti. He's now in prison for defrauding one of his clients for $1 million. We had the opportunity to meet a couple of attorneys. And one of them charged us $5,000. And told us that he had a lot of experience. It was all baloney. He didn't. I mean, he tried critically. He did try, but he wasn't in any power to fight Judge Kazin. Judge Kazin was,
right.
He had an effort. He had an agenda to protect everyone against Charlie and myself, period. As far
right.
as...
I know, and not to interrupt you, but I wanted to say that you haven't seen Charlie in a long time, and I know that we've been talking a lot about the isolation and all that and how hard it is to be separated from your loved one. And I think that is the biggest terror of all.
Cruelty.
You're
just
not
cruelty.
Allowed to go and talk to your person that you've had your whole life. I mean, many years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your loved one, your
mm-hmm.
husband, your spouse, your common law, and all of a sudden you're not allowed to be with them anymore. It's just disrupting itself.
It's horrible. I can't touch Charlie. I can't wake up with him. I can't look forward to coffee with him. He taught me a lot about cooking breakfast and fun stuff. He had a routine like no one else's before he went downstairs to the shop. On his days off, he attributed a lot to my understanding about racing and other, tactics as far as, influencing me to do car stuff, novelties. I can't even go to a car race without feeling guilty that Charlie's not there. My whole life has been turned around. Two of my kids have suffered psychologically. The importance of, there were underlying issues, but truly two of my children, I would say all three of them really, have been affected. Two of them are nonstop, Charlie this, Charlie that. The other one kind of just keeps everything internalized. And I tell my kids, I said, look, I've got to hand it to Phil. I don't know how much to say and how much not to say without, any guidance, but I will be very genuine, okay? I have enough intelligence to tell you that I personally feel that I was introduced to a person who I had a brief stint in a website and helping us and teaching us and lecturing us about, consulting about guardianships and this and that. This person kind of she turned vindictive on Phil and most certainly used that strategy to influence my children and I to write against Phil and fire Phil.
Yeah.
And on her advice, instead of being smarter, we translated that, maybe she does have a point, and we did go with it. Well, later on, I wanted to rescind, and Phil said, no, don't worry about it. It's all right, But the point is I want to be an advocate now, if I can, and I want to tell everyone, if you're working with an attorney, and you really trust this attorney and admire him and appreciate him, don't ever, not even his wife or girlfriend or anyone, let them influence you to turn against him in any way. That is your partner. He is trying to protect you and your loved ones. And this is nothing but modern slavery and abuse. It's like CPS, the APS thing. They're equipped with a system to protect each other, but they're trying to protect the children. They're trying to protect the adults fine. However, in my eyes, it's not that they are trying to remove the freedom. It's the court that's trying to remove the freedom so they can continue to traffic and exploit and enslave and abuse the Charlie Thrashes. And so as an advocate, I feel violated. And I feel that the only way to educate people is maybe conduct fundraisers, go to churches, volunteer, intern, learn policies, go to your job, go to other people's jobs, go to Washington, D.C., do the Luann Fleming radio blog shows, things like that. Continue to educate people. Because if we don't have these conversations, just the other day I spoke to one of the directors at LULAC, and I told him, I said, I need you to speak to this awesome man named Phil Ross, Combating Exploitation of Elderly, and I need you to speak to him. And after he did, he said, man, thank you very much for turning me on to him. I really didn't know about that, and we're all going to live in our golden years, and we want to live with dignity and security, but, independent from a court system, for God's sakes. So, I think it's a scam. I really think it's racketeering, and it's a red flag. And if we don't start hotlining these senators and legislators and congressmen and really start telling D.C., one of my bosses told me the problem is, he said, I used to work with Ronald Reagan, and the Hill, when you're at the Hill, he said, it's so big that it's so hard for you to get a whole bunch of people behind you. And I said, remember Nelson Mandela? Remember Cesar Chavez? Remember all of these other guys like Martin Luther King? They didn't see it like that. when they related to, come on, guys, let's all organize, mobilize, that's what they accounted their, that's why they were leaders, and that's why they were good leaders, because they uncovered remarkable evidence, and then the management, you know, they managed it, the management people, and they did these marches and protests. And that's exactly what we need to continue to do and continue to provide cards or flyers. And whenever you're at a parade, man, just spread them out. You know, if you find them on the ground, pick them up again and spread them out again. That's what I agree with, San Antonio.
That's what I agree with you, is that we have advocates in almost every single state right now that are doing tremendous work on this. And I do believe that we wouldn't even have a Senate hearing meeting tomorrow if there wasn't a Free Brittany movement, and if there wasn't all these different radio shows, TS Radio and Faces Radio, and all of these advocates out there speaking, Hillary Hogue and Marcy and Robin and I, and you name it, we've got quite a crew. Rick Black, you know, we've got, you know, NASA Association and Catherine Falk, and we've got Dr. Sam Sugar that was out there. And I think if it wasn't for all of these advocates, sir, I do believe that this would still continue. And I think that we have helped a lot. I mean,
you're absolutely right. And the ones who passed away, don't forget.
When you say, when you talk about go and into, you know, bring pamphlets and circulate them and then pick them up off the ground and circulate them again. It is that kind of, you know, what the successes that I've seen in this state when we organized had to do with the times that we actually organized a group of people to get out, and we made signs with two sides on them, had a pithy little phrase on each side, and organized and mentioned by name, this judge has no accountability, this courtroom is corrupt. And
it was great.
And held those signs up, passing cars, and had a dozen or so people with colorful signs with things, messages that could be picked up in just a glance. And a few days after, we heard that judge had resigned early, taken early retirement. And I think it was a direct result of being exposed, because criminals don't like their dirty deeds exposed.
Right, in the last few minutes, we're going to talk about a lot, you know, some more of this, and the show's been actually really good because, you know, Phil came out on here and told us, you know, how Phil had to go through the disciplinary action and how he had to retire, and actually it's a godsend. So we actually want to spend, like, the last 5 minutes talking to Phil, you know, and telling him, thank you so much for the people that you've defended. Thank you for coming on to our radio shows. And just thank you for being who you are and speaking out about this. You know, so I think that, you know, we need more attorneys to come forward. And I think we need to put a lot of attorneys to come together. And I want to get a lot of former attorneys, ones that's been, you know, faced disciplinary action. We have at least 15 or so that we know of. We'd like to get them onto our radio show. Maybe do a couple of weeks.
Definitely.
I think that really needs to be done, because the attorneys are in the courtrooms. They have been there. They have done the work. They have seen what goes on behind closed doors.
They see the battleground up close.
They see everything in detail, right?
But we
don't see,
because it's locked behind closed doors.
And
they're in the midst.
Right, Phil? That's what we want
to... If I could just say one final thing. And Laura, I hope you're feeling well. I don't know if I read something that you were a little under the weather, but we love you and we support you. And, you know, the five of us, Laura, Phil, Robin, Luann, and I, you know, it's like we know it's bad, because some people, you know, they've got the fire and then they're out of the game. We are still, like, we have a fire, as they say in the U.S., we have a fire up our ass, because we are just so angry. But one of the things that Mr. Ross said, and, you know, there's some people say, well, these judges, they're getting paid off under the needs of the table. We have no definitive that that's the case. Well, they've got mortgages and they're paid off. Maybe that's the truth, but we've got no definitive. But what we can say definitively, I can definitely say it, and in commenting on what Mr. Ross said, is these judges are enabling these attorneys.
Mm-hmm.
And they are
yeah.
definitely guilty of that. They are enabling them, whether they worked with them when they were attorneys before they got the judgeship. They are enabling them to do what's wrong to innocent victims of probate corruption. So
my family and I, Hillary, my family and I saw and felt the bullying in Judge Kazin's court like you would feel the bullying in a high school in a corner with a gang of 12 people fighting against 2 people. I mean, we felt it.
Mm-hmm.
We were there.
Sure.
We saw what they do and how they do it.
But
I've been in courtrooms. I've been in probably 30 courtrooms where I have seen and witnessed it for my own self. 15 to 20 attorneys against 1 or 2 people in court, all collecting a payday, raking a $14,000-$15,000 one day, overkeeping a lady in guardianship who was worth a few million dollars. I've seen it. I've witnessed it myself.
We've seen it. One other thing, quickly, and I'm sorry for cutting in.
Go ahead.
Just about you saying that you were bullied, and I'm sure we all agree. But what I will say is, even though that was the case, from the outside looking in, right, because I'm in Florida, you've handled yourself with such, I mean, you are a class act. I've never seen you lose your temper. I've never heard you yell and scream. You always talk in a low voice, and, you know, it goes to show the type of person you are. So just remember that and always hold your head up high and your shoulders back, because you are doing the right thing. You are fighting the good fight. So those are my final words, and I love everyone, and thank you for letting me be on the show again, Luann and Robin.
Got it.
Well, Phil, I'm gonna leave, Phil, but I just want to let you, Luann, know, and Phil and Hillary and everyone, that my family sends a big heartfelt thank you, and that in many ways we're happy that Phil stands up no matter what. He doesn't forget to appreciate his life and everyone else's life, and I think that the moment has come for Phil to really prove that he is a maverick. He's already the maverick, and it's never going to go away,
yeah.
But now he's going to show us what we really need to see as far as the real maverick, but show who what it's all about, because I think that that's what's going to make this whole thing special. And Charlie, yep. Wherever Charlie is, we haven't seen Charlie. I haven't seen him, but I know that Charlie feels my love, and Charlie feels all of our love, and I think that's why Charlie's still alive today. And thank you very much for those people who have passed on but fought the good fight for Charlie. So thanks, everyone. Good night. And Luann, thank you for having Phil.
Thank you. And, he's going to be, Phil, you're going to be the maverick of social justice here. You know, I can just see it now. I am just really glad you came onto the radio show to talk about this. I hope you, like I said, just keep in touch with us, Phil, whatever you have to do. If you need us there for anything, you let us know. You've been there for us every time we've talked to you. Keep us about what's going on with Netflix and that whole scenario. There's so many people that contact me every day to the show that want to know what's going on with that. So if you could, that would be great. Anything else you want to say, Robin?
Justice requires transparency and accountability. Thank you for helping us work in that direction.
Giving up is not an option. There you go. Phil, thank you very much for coming on. Appreciate you. Thank you, Hillary. Marcy, thank you. I'm sure you were listening in tonight. We will be back here again next week. I'll let everybody know who our guests will be next week. Thank you, Phil. Appreciate it.
God bless us, everyone.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. We're going to play Get NASCA commercial one night. Here we go.
Did you know that elders and others are losing their rights to liberty and property? Anyone can petition a court to have a person deemed incapacitated. What if that person is you? The adult guardianship system was created to protect incompetent people and their assets. A court-appointed guardian, sometimes a total stranger, can force you into a nursing home and sell your home to pay for services. Treasured belongings can disappear as you are drugged and isolated from loved ones. Why does this happen? Unfortunately, the courts don't have the funding to supervise and audit cases. A guardian makes all decisions on your behalf, taking control of your assets with little accountability. The potential for abuse is frightening. Luckily, not all guardians exploit those under their care, but when they do, there's really nowhere to go for help. The National Association to Stop Guardian Abuse, NASGA, is working to reform adult guardianship to return it to its once noble purpose of protecting the human rights to life, liberty, and property and ending financial exploitation of assets. Are you or your loved ones protected? To learn more, visit StopGuardianAbuse.org.